Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. Houseplants become more active as days get longer. This article appeared recently in the Arizona Republic, written by Dean Fosdick of the Associated Press. Houseplants are quick to tell you when they need help. They display discolored leaves, drooping stems, and little or no growth. That usually gives you enough time to make things right. Plants send signals simply by the way they look, said Dawn Pettinelli, an extension educator at the University of Connecticut. If they aren't getting enough light, the leaves will yellow or turn brown, and they'll be slow to develop. Off-color leaves also can be the symptom of root problems, insect infestations, irregular soil moisture, or unsuitable light conditions or temperatures. African violets, one of America's most popular houseplants, don't like to be too cold, but also get stressed when it's too warm. They'll start wilting if they're chilled, and they won't bloom if they're hot, Pettinelli said. Their buds will fall off. A good way to rejuvenate many kinds of tired houseplants is by pruning or giving them what some growers dub horticultural haircuts. Pruning serves a variety of functions, including shaping, removing dead matter, and cutting back to reduce stem loads and keep the plants from sagging or drooping, said Diana Alfath, a horticulturalist with University of Wisconsin Extension. But don't prune too soon. Pruning can be helpful, but pruning causes growth, so it's best done in late winter when the days start getting longer and the plants become more active, Alfath said in an email. Pruning then results in strong new growth. Pruning is helpful to keep a plant bushier or to rejuvenate a plant, especially if it has vining-type growth. Slow-growing or tree-type houseplants are less tolerant of major trimming, she said. Avoid pruning palms, pines, and orchids. Pruning also provides an opportunity to take cuttings, segments from the stems, leaves, or roots to develop new plants. Some houseplants are more tolerant of neglect and need less maintenance than others. Succulents are great because they can go without water for long spells, and they grow slowly, so rarely need pruning or repotting, Alpha said. A houseplant's diet is important, and so is the timing of fertilizer applications. Houseplants should not be fertilized during winter when days are short, Alpha said. Fertilize in late winter as days get longer and plants wake up and will need fertilizer to put on growth during spring. Houseplant maintenance doesn't need to be confined to spring cleaning. It can be done any time of the year, but a good way to remember it is by making it a New Year's resolution, Pettinelli said. And don't forget to dust. When plants start touching the floor, they start collecting dust, Pettinelli said. If covered with dust, photosynthesis is reduced and the plants start losing some of their chemical energy for growth. Be careful not to overwater, which is one of the leading causes of houseplant losses. Plants lose oxygen when they get too much water, Pettinelli said, especially the roots. They'll drown. Check to see if your plants are root-bound and need repotting. If so, then buy larger containers and fill them with loose potting soils mixed with perlite or peat moss, and be sure the pots have holes cut in the bottom so any excess water can drain out. And from the recent issue of Consumer Reports magazine, Leafy Greens Safety Guide. In an age of rampant romaine contamination, can our salads be saved? We explain what's at the root of the problem, what critical changes are needed, and what will and won't protect you in the meantime. The story written by Kevin Loria. When Carolyn Graham ordered a garden salad at a pizza restaurant near her hometown of Loomis, California on a weekday night in April 2018, she felt good about what she thought was a healthy choice. But by the weekend, she had stomach cramps and diarrhea, which grew more severe with each passing hour. By 11 p.m. that Saturday, the diarrhea had turned bloody, and it continued all night long. Around 6 a.m. Sunday, she and her husband Kenneth headed to the emergency room. Doctors gave her fluids, oxygen, and an antibiotic, but Graham's symptoms didn't abate. It took doctors 3 days of testing and analyzing results to determine that Graham had been infected with E. coli, a dangerous strain of the bacteria that produces a substance called Shiga toxin. Graham, who was 72 and had been in excellent health, had developed a form of kidney failure called hemolytic uremic syndrome, a side effect that occurs in 5 to 10% of people who contract this strain of E. coli. Doctors put Graham on dialysis to help her kidneys function properly again, but she was going in and out of consciousness during her 14-day hospital stay. Her husband, one of her daughters, and a granddaughter stayed by her bedside until she was fully conscious and able to recognize the people around her. Then, her husband says, she had to relearn how to talk, how to walk, a rehab process that took about 2 months before she was back to normal. The culprit in Graham's ordeal? The romaine lettuce in that seemingly innocuous garden salad. That spring, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Food and Drug Administration sent out multiple national alerts, eventually telling people not to eat romaine from the Yuma, Arizona area. Graham, it turned out, was one of 240 people across 37 states in the United States that spring who government officials say became sick from tainted romaine. It was the largest national E. coli outbreak in more than 20 years. Almost half of those affected were hospitalized, and 5 people from 4 states died. And then, right before Thanksgiving that same year, supermarkets and restaurants pulled romaine from their shelves and menus after federal officials announced yet another E. coli outbreak. Just as consumers thought perhaps the 2018 E. coli outbreaks were a distant traumatic memory, romaine-related illnesses returned. In outbreaks starting in October 2019 and continuing into December, 133 people were sickened. This was despite steps taken over the past 2 years by farmers and the FDA to identify the sources of the outbreaks. Consumer Reports is actively advocating for improved inspection and farming practices to better protect the lettuce food supply. At CR, we are also surveying Americans about their habits and working to debunk myths, including the perception that triple-washed packaged lettuce is always safe, when in fact, the washing process doesn't remove all harmful bacteria. It's astonishing how frequently the lettuce-consuming public has been exposed to bacteria like E. coli over the years, said Bill Marler, a food safety lawyer in Seattle who negotiated a settlement for Graham. I have dozens of clients over the years whose lives have been completely upended, he says. They've needed kidney transplants and had hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical expenses because they chose to eat a presumably healthy food. In fact, between 2006 and 2019, romaine and other leafy greens such as spinach and bags of spring mix have been involved in at least 46 multi-state E. coli outbreaks, according to the CDC. Now, some research shows that greens cause more cases of food poisoning than any other food, including beef. The constant drumbeat of romaine-related E. coli outbreaks has made Americans very worried about eating lettuce. In a 2019 nationally representative Consumer Reports survey of 1,003 Americans, 52% admitted being concerned about getting sick from leafy greens, more than those who are worried about poisonings from beef, chicken, or eggs. Sales of romaine, which was until recently the most popular lettuce in the United States, are down in the wake of the 2018 outbreaks, dropping about $98 million to $465 million from their $563 million peak in 2017, according to data from market research from Nielsen. Iceberg has regained the number one spot. Meanwhile, lettuce growers and the FDA have been trying to figure out where, from farm to fork, the potentially deadly bacteria are finding their way into and onto lettuce leaves. Frank Yannis, Deputy Commissioner for Food Policy and Response at the FDA and the agency's top food official, told CR, FDA has been working tirelessly to prevent these outbreaks, but we're going to work harder. It's a high priority for the agency and a high priority for me personally. In the meantime, for those who want to continue to get the health benefits of leafy greens, there are safety guidelines that can help to mitigate the risk. How did leafy greens, nutrient-packed foods recommended by doctors and nutritionists alike, become so risky? And why is romaine linked to so many of these outbreaks? It comes down to the modern way we grow, harvest, and package our salad greens. There are many opportunities along the continuum, from seed all the way to a consumer's plate, for greens to become contaminated, said Ben Chapman, Ph.D., a professor and food safety extension specialist at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. Part of the reason greens in particular are so problematic is the sheer volume we're consuming. The leafy greens industry ships about 130 million servings per day all year long, enough to supply a daily salad fix to nearly 40% of Americans, and almost a quarter of the greens being consumed are romaine lettuce. Perhaps most important, salad greens are almost always eaten raw, unlike burgers, eggs, flour, and many other foods that can be contaminated with pathogens but are usually cooked enough to kill any bacteria. You can destroy E. coli and other bacteria with enough heat, but few people are going to cook their lettuce, said James E. Rogers, Ph.D., Director of Food Safety Research and Testing at Consumer Reports. A food that doesn't have a final consumer kill step presents some extra challenges for food safety, said Matthew Wise, Ph.D., Deputy Chief of the CDC's Outbreak Response and Prevention Branch. That's probably the main driver among a number of factors that can cause an outbreak, he says. We face a real dilemma with leafy greens, especially romaine lettuce, says Rogers. They're packed with nutrients, so we don't want to discourage people from eating them, but we can't ignore the fact that leafy greens are potentially risky, perhaps one of the riskiest foods. But, he says, we need answers on what's happening with greens sooner rather than later. More needs to be done to determine the exact sources of contamination with dangerous bacteria, he says. Once that's done, the FDA must set strict requirements for growers and processors, which will help prevent people from getting sick. While the odds that you'll get sick from eating any single salad are low, Rogers says they're real. When you hear about 100 or 200 people contracting a foodborne illness, it may not sound like that many, but for every case of food poisoning that's reported, there are many, many more cases that never get reported. In fact, according to the CDC, for every reported case of E. coli infection, there are probably 26 that have gone undocumented. So, how do bacteria get into the greens in the first place? To answer that, it helps to understand the critical water needs of greens and how they are sometimes grown near livestock, both of which can open a pathway to contamination. John Boltz, a farmer in Yuma, owns one of the 60-plus farms that cover a stretch of land from Yuma and the surrounding area to California's Imperial Valley. That's when the vast majority of leafy greens on the market in the U.S. and Canada are harvested in winter. The Yuma growing season begins with the planting of seeds in August in the hot, arid desert. Over the next few months, the dusty brown fields become filled with rows of emerald green heads of romaine, iceberg lettuce, vegetables, and fruits. Harvesting begins in late October. Lettuce grows best when daytime temperatures are moderate and nights are cools, so as the weather in the Yuma region warms up, lettuce production shifts to California, moving in seasonal increments throughout the southern coast, central coast, Salinas Valley, and parts of the Central Valley. Although the soil and environment differ in all those regions, including Yuma, one thing they have in common is that they don't get much rain, and greens need a lot of water to grow, as much as 36 inches per acre, so all those lettuce fields require irrigation. At farms around Yuma, such as Bolt's water is channeled from the nearby Colorado River through a system of irrigation canals. Once the greens grow to maturity, they're harvested, mostly by hand, Bolt says. Growers take samples of the greens to check for harmful bacteria, but they don't check every leaf, which is why the bacteria sometimes slip through. Some greens are packed right in the field to be immediately cooled and shipped to stores. Greens that are destined to be bagged or sold in plastic containers, 65% of Americans buy packaged greens, according to market research from Mintel, are taken from the field to processing plants where tons of lettuce from multiple farms are mixed together. Romaine is produced to the tune of 1.5 million tons per year. There, the lettuce is usually washed in water that contains chlorine or another sanitizer, then rinsed, dried, packaged, and shipped to supermarkets and restaurants across the country. What any lettuce farmer will tell you is that he or she fears the animals that live around lettuce fields. That's because E. coli and other strains of illness-causing bacteria live in the guts of cattle and other animals, including sheep, deer, wild boar, even birds. Although the E. coli bacteria don't usually make the animals sick, when they defecate, they deposit dangerous bacteria into the soil and water around them. That contaminated soil could later end up mixed with dirt tracked by equipment, people, or animals onto a field full of leafy greens, or rain could wash the bacteria into one of the open irrigation canals that are so important for lettuce-growing regions. This route to food poisoning has been known about for longer than a decade. In 2006, in an E. coli outbreak linked to spinach, federal officials said that a possible source was waste from feral pigs that got into growing fields. Because animals can contaminate their valuable crops, farmers put a lot of effort into keeping them away. We pay people to stand by fields and scare birds off, Bolt says. We surround fields with 8-foot-tall fences prohibiting animals from being on our farm. We're doing everything science says we should, he says. But contamination still occurs, and experts and research say it's because fields of leafy greens are sometimes located next door to large cattle farms known as concentrated animal feeding operations. It's because of the proximity of cattle feedlots to fresh produce fields, said Keith Warner, PhD, a professor in the Department of Food Science at the University of Guelph in Ontario, who has studied foodborne illnesses linked to produce. In the Salinas Valley, you'll see cattle roaming the hills. Romaine from the Salinas region was linked to the outbreaks in fall 2018 and fall 2019. With every outbreak, there's a cow somewhere, says attorney Marler, who has tracked food poisoning incidents linked to greens for almost 20 years. It has also been suspected that bacteria mix with the soil and become part of the dust, which can be carried by the wind from a concentrated animal feeding operation and deposited onto the greens as they grow in the field. But experts and investigators from the FDA and CDC have focused on contaminated irrigation water as the most likely vector. E. coli-tainted manure can run off down hills and into rivers, contaminating water sources, Warner says. An FDA investigation to identify the source of the contamination in the spring 2018 outbreak that sickened Carolyn Graham never reached a firm conclusion. But investigators strongly suspect an irrigation canal that reportedly provided water to the 36 romaine fields involved in the outbreak. They found the E. coli outbreak strain in 3 samples taken from the canal, which is next to a concentrated animal feeding operation that houses more than 100,000 cows. The source of the Thanksgiving 2018 outbreak is also still a mystery, but the FDA did find the strain of E. coli that made people sick in sediment from a water reservoir on one of the California farms that grew contaminated lettuce. It's possible that droppings from wild animals tainted the water, but there's also a concentrated animal feeding operation near the lettuce farm. These findings suggest that to solve the lettuce problem, we really have to solve the cow problem, said Michael Hansen, Ph.D., senior scientist at Consumer Reports. Yet even though nearby feeding operations were thought to be the source of the bacteria that caused the outbreaks, under the law, the FDA wasn't allowed to access those feedlots, and that dead-ended the investigation. We'll have more of this article in next week's show, but right now I'd like to focus on the health benefits of leafy greens. Given the concerns about contamination, you may be tempted to cut greens out of your diet, but that would be a shame. Nutritionists agree that the benefits are substantial. Research shows that they're linked to a reduced risk of heart disease, certain cancers, macular degeneration, and type 2 diabetes. They may also help to keep memory sharp as a person ages. Most greens have a healthy nutritional profile, but each kind also has its individual superpowers, which is why it's good to eat a variety. And the first one on this list is arugula. Arugula is rich in vitamin K, which helps to prevent osteoporosis and inflammatory disease. Like other cruciferous veggies, broccoli and Brussels sprouts, for example, it has glucosinolates, which may protect against certain cancers. It's tasty in salads or sautéed. Butter, a.k.a. Boston or Bibb. This family of mild-flavored head lettuce with soft, loose leaves doesn't have quite the nutrient profile of certain darker greens, but 2 cups supplies 85% of your daily vitamin K need, along with some iron and vitamin A. Collards is next. This cooking green is rich in calcium, fiber, folate, and the antioxidant carotenoids, beta-carotene, and lutein. Sautéing in olive oil, garlic, and a little smoked salt adds flavor and keeps it healthier than the traditional ham hock or bacon preparation. Iceberg, though it ranks toward the bottom of the greens list nutritionally, it still provides some potassium, vitamin C, and folate. Kale is next. Turn to kale for vitamin C and K, lutein, and zeaxanthin, which may help to protect against age-related macular degeneration and possibly cataracts, and cancer-fighting glucosinolates. Use baby and mature kale in salads. The latter can also be cooked in soup or in pasta. Red or green leaf is next. Both are rich in vitamins A and K. Green leaf is higher in vitamin C. Red leaf lettuce gets its color from the flavonoid, antioxidant, anthocyanin, which may help to lower levels of LDL, which is the bad cholesterol. And then there's romaine, beta-carotene, which your body converts to vitamin A, and folate are its standard nutrients. It's best in salads or on sandwiches that need crunch and can also stand up to a quick grilling. Spinach. This green supplies a hefty dose of vitamin K, potassium, and folate. If you eat it cooked, it will also supply iron and calcium. The oxalic acid it contains reduces absorption of these minerals from raw spinach, but cooking breaks down oxalic acid. And then there's Swiss chard. A cooked cup of this strongly flavored green gives you all the vitamin K that you need per day, plus vitamins A and C and antioxidant carotenoids and flavonoids. Toss into egg dishes or soups or sauté with garlic and top with sesame seeds or with lemon juice. And those of you who listen to this show on a regular basis know we feature excerpts from the terrific book Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul each week, and this particular one is called You Forgot Something and is written by Bernie Siegel, M.D., and there's a quote here from Patricia Neal. A strong, positive mental attitude will create more miracles than any wonder drug. You forgot something. A monk was working in his garden when his students came up to him and asked, "What would you do if you had 15 minutes to live?" He responded, "Continue to do what I am doing." That did not impress me, so I asked one of our sons what he would do. "I'd buy a quart of chocolate ice cream and eat it. That revealed enlightenment to me until someone came up and said, "Perhaps you're being too harsh with the monk. What if his chocolate ice cream is his garden?" Ah, then I remembered. Spring was in the air. However, this was the year John Florio planned to retire, so this spring he would not be doing any commercial landscaping as he had for his entire life. John had planted thousands of bulbs, plants, and trees over the years and had created a beautiful world for all to enjoy. He was known best for surrounding office buildings with flowers, so everyone's workday was made a little easier by the beauty he created. When John developed a burning sensation in his stomach, he took some antacids. When the distress continued, he saw his physician, who ordered a GI series. His physician suspected an ulcer caused by John's depression and the stress related to his retirement, which the X-ray confirmed. Stronger medication did nothing to relieve John's symptoms. Further X-rays and tests revealed an enlarging ulcer, and a biopsy was obtained, which diagnosed a carcinoma of the stomach. It was at this point that John appeared in my office. "John, I have a week's vacation coming up in March, and I don't want to delay your operation, so let's get you right into the hospital." "You forgot something." "What did I forget?" "It's springtime. I'm going to go home and make the world beautiful, and when I'm done, I'll return for the operation." I returned from my vacation. Many weeks went by. One day, John appeared in the office. "I'm ready for the operation now." John was admitted to the hospital, and at the time of surgery, I found a large malignant tumor which could not be completely removed. I sat down at his bedside the next morning. "John, I couldn't remove all the cancer. You need more treatment, possibly chemo and radiation." "You forgot something." "What did I forget?" "It's still springtime. I don't have time for your treatment. I'm going home to make a beautiful world, and if I die, I'll leave a beautiful world." I didn't argue with him, nor did his family. He was discharged home and did not return to the office as scheduled. A year later, I came into the office and noticed his chart in one of the examining room racks. I turned to my nurse. "You have the wrong chart. He is dead. We must have two patients by that name. Get me the correct chart." "Why don't you open the door?" I opened the door to the examining room, and there sat John. "Hi, Doc. I have a hernia from lifting boulders in my landscape business." We fixed his hernia as an outpatient because John wanted no part of hospitals. There was no sign of cancer anywhere. A few months later, John was back in the office. I was told by the office staff he was having problems with his diet. This time I was sure it must be his cancer recurring and obstructing his stomach. "Doc, I know you took out half my stomach, but I'm hungry and I need to talk to you about my diet." Needless to say, John had no problem eating whatever he desired. From then on, the only calls I had from John were for treatment of various aches and pains related to his work. I began to spend time with him outside the office. He became my teacher, showing me how beautiful the world was when seen through his eyes. I began to see tiny flowers and colors everywhere that I'd never noticed before. I felt like an extraterrestrial landing on this planet, seeing it for the first time. I still collect flowers as I jog or bike that I bring home to plant in our yard while thinking of John and how he taught me to see beauty everywhere. My wife and I were invited to the Florio's 70th wedding anniversary, and it was a thrill to see all the lives he had touched and helped to make beautiful. When John's wife became ill, they moved into a nursing home where he still kept making the world beautiful. John lived to be 94 with never any sign of cancer. He outlived his wife and wrote an autobiography before he died. In it, he said, "I always hope I'll die working in my garden." He did, because the world was his garden. Someday I hope the world will be filled with John Florios who make up their garden. What you consider your garden is up to you. Just don't forget springtime is a state of mind and spend your lifetime working to create a beautiful world. When you do, you will be planting the seed of life within every cell in your body. So grow, bloom, and blossom, and use the difficulties of life to fertilize your growth. From Bernie Siegel, MD, "You Forgot Something," from Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For listeners supported Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, and we'll be talking with you soon.